How are you? Are you in Albuquerque?
I'm in the Kirk. Yeah, I'm in the Kirk. I just arrived. I literally landed, got to the hotel. I had to eat. Got a little fish and chips across the street. And now I'm in my hotel room. And work tomorrow. First scene up. And then I get in my car and I drive back to Colorado for 7 hours. That's my two-day schedule. So if anyone's in Albuquerque, don't try to contact me because I will be gone when this episode airs.
So let's run through that again.
Okay.
And we have a special guest to bring on, but...
We do. Oh, we do? This is news to me.
No, we do. Do you read any of the texts? Any?
Every third word I sort of do. You know?
Skip by. So you flew to Albuquerque or drove to Albuquerque?
I flew.
How are you driving back?
My car is here. You know, I know that our audience is really into logistics, so I'm going to go through this.
Okay.
I drove from Colorado, my truck, 7 hours. I drove it here. And in the last couple of weeks, I've been flying back and forth, leaving my truck here so I can get to work, you know, because they don't pick me up and take me home from work. I have to get there myself. Now, I'm going to drive my truck home on Thursday and then drive home on Sunday to LA. So then my truck and everything is in LA. I'm going to rent a car in Albuquerque, and then I'm going to fly back and forth from LA for the next 3 months to be with my family. Oh, and I've got some news. I've got some news.
Okay.
I read the script, the third script, and there was a part of my ex-wife, not my ex-wife, but we're separated for various reasons. And I'm trying to get her back, and you know, there's a storyline there. And I put Erin Bartlett, now known as Erin Hudson, after she was married, on tape to read the scene, to audition for this part, and she fucking got it. So she was great, by the way. Sent the tape off. You know, the creator, the producers texted me and said she did great. We got to put to the higher ups. And they then sort of, you know, told me that, look, we've had other people audition who are friends and family and relatives and stuff, and we would never put her through if she wasn't good enough. Because I said, look, if she's not right, then fuck it. You know, it's just for fun. It's not a big deal. But she was great. Casting director emailed me, you know, saying she was really good. And this is a prominent casting director at Fox. And she got the fucking job. So she's playing my estranged wife.
That's so great. So you're such a giver in these projects. You had your son hired. You had your Erin was going to be part of the montage of back in the day with your other show that didn't get picked up. And now, and I can say this out loud because our special guest couldn't hear what you were saying because I'm wearing headphones. Now Erin is going to be in this new Fox show with you as your estranged wife.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah. Oh, there's the special guest. What is she wearing?
What is Michelle Beisnerbuck wearing? She's wearing a cloak of
uncertainty,
jealousy, uncertainty, and anger.
Oh, this is going to be a good special guest.
What you don't know is, so in the last episode, which we did prior to Field of Dreams, which we will talk about as this podcast continues, we named it, or Josh Windisch named it, No Name Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Because I told the story about how I left my wife's actual name out of my acceptance speech in Canton, Ohio for the Pete Rozelle Award 2020, given in 2021. Michelle happened to listen to it yesterday morning.
Wow, late.
And came bouncing into the kitchen and said, I've got a bone to pick with you.
Can I interrupt for just 2 seconds?
Yeah, I feel like she should be able to hear this.
Did she listen? Hold on. Did she listen to this new Smartless episode before our new episode?
Oh, that's a good question. Question from Oliver Hudson, Albuquerque, New Mexico. wants to know if you listened to the new Smartless podcast episode prior to listening to our latest episode.
Why is that relevant to what we're about to talk about?
Well, because Joe said you just listened to the Field of Dreams episode like yesterday when it came out a week ago.
No, the No Name Hall of Fame episode?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, well, I started to listen to it. Listen, I bounce around.
I don't have set
times or days that I listen to said podcast. So jealousy cloak now that you are wearing, have no fear. I have listened to every single one of the podcasts that you've done.
I know, but it's about priority.
Every single podcast that Smartless has done.
It's about priority.
Hold on. I want to make sure. How are you hearing this? Are you reading his lips?
I don't hear anything. Lips very well.
Yeah. Okay. I want to be able to hear. I don't know why I can't hear you. I think it's because of this janky setup that Josh gave me. So we're gonna have to share headphones. Hold, please.
Okay.
I'm gonna hold. Hear.
You can hear me. How?
Well, now I can't. I could hear when these were on you.
Okay. Okay.
There.
Okay. I guess
can you hear?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear through it. Just flip those around.
Oh, you can hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's about priority, Michelle. You know what I mean? Like, I know you listen to every episode of ours, but you listened to it late. And did you or did you not listen to Smartless podcast before ours this last week? Just answer the question.
I don't go in order of things. So I listened to a little bit of Smartless, and then I listened to a little bit of you guys.
Or did you not listen to the Smartless podcast episode, the new one, before ours? It's a simple question. I'm playing an FBI agent in this new show, and so as you can see, my personality has absorbed my character.
Well, you're not convincing because you need to really step into character and bring it.
His character is going to be the guy that... He's going to be like a modern day. This is the way I read this rule for Oliver, like a modern day Columbo. Instead of going, can I ask you one more question? Just one more thing. Why was the kitchen door open if you had said you locked? What Oliver's going to do is he's just going to annoy the shit out of anyone that he's asking questions of. So eventually they just relent. They just relent and go, fine, I killed her. Right. Take me away. I'm done with these questions.
You did give me an idea, though, because when I am promoting this show and they're asking me about the role, which they always do, I'm going to say that I sort of based my character off of Columbo. I think that's a really funny...
Because all the kids are talking about Columbo these days. Are you wearing a trench coat in this?
That's funny.
Are you wearing a trench coat? Answer the question.
No, actually, I like my wardrobe. I have a beard, long hair... T-shirt, jeans. He's a sort of an OTG FBI special agent. You know what I mean? Off the grid a little bit. So
that's perfect for you. You didn't grow out the hair or the beard yourself, huh? Oh, okay.
Well, my hair was longer, and they chopped it a little bit, and then I came to the table read in front of the network and the studio and everything, shaved my beard, but had a full-on mustache. And I was like, let's see how this plays, because I would love to have a mustache. And it was sort of a 50-50 deal. And so they said, well, you can keep the mustache, but at least grow in the sides a little bit. So,
Because did you want to incorporate some kind of a, you know, running your fingers through the stash?
Oh, yeah, like for sure. This is how this guy thinks, you know. He's Kojak
had a lollipop. You have
a mustache.
Below nose hair. All right, so she's mad. She said, I have a bone to pick with you.
You brought up an interesting word, Oliver. The word that you just brought up is priority. Why would I be bringing up the word priority?
Okay, can I take
any guesses?
Look, I know what went down, and we need to be honest.
Okay, but do you?
Yeah, no, we talked about it. We talked about the same thing where he
didn't. Exactly, so you talked about it. Which is great. So you heard his side, which is awesome.
We pop all zits here, babe. We pop all zits.
Well,
there nothing is off limits.
What you haven't heard, my friend, is the actual 3-minute and 24-second Hall of Fame speech, which we would like to play for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I want you to listen, unbiased, if possible, and give me your candid and honest thoughts at the end of it.
Okay, can
now,
I...
Now, last I, week, for listeners okay. out there that did not... Let's just give them a little refresher. Joe came on and said, oh, how... You know, you said, how does it feel, Hall of Famer? Do you feel any different? No, I don't. And here's why. Because I forgot to mention my wife's name. But what I did do in my 3 minute and 24 second speech was I told everyone about our love story.
Yeah.
I basically did everything and said everything but her name.
Yes.
Okay. That's where we will leave it.
Okay, hold on.
I want you to listen to the speech.
We're going
to
listen to it, but I want to say one thing before the speech starts.
Okay.
Can we mathematically just break this down for a second? The 3 minutes and 24 seconds, we're going to equate that to Joe's entire career as a broadcaster, okay? Where does Michelle Beisner fit into that 3 minutes and 24 seconds? You know what I mean? So it's a long career he's had. You've been a part of, you're an important part, obviously, but you're a short part. You know, let's get mathematical for a second.
You're just digging my hole deeper.
I'm trying to help you.
I don't appreciate that. And you're not helping. You're not helping me at all.
And let's also be clear about this. I have said many o times since this Hall of Fame speech happened, I know this was not intentional. I know you had triple zeros and, you know, somebody telling you to get the hell off the stage. I understand that. But you just listen to the whole thing.
Okay.
And I also said, and this is not about me.
It is.
I don't want to sound like some narcissistic asshole.
Babe, I love you. I think you're beautiful. Your body's really great. I love your new boobs, everything. I love it all. But it is about you. It is about you because you know how much he loves you. You know,
I know.
How he was exalted in sort of speaking about you and just forgot your name. Why does it matter? Because you care what other people think. That's it.
No. Just listen to the speech and then we'll talk.
Okay. Play it.
Keep it clear your mind of any sort of biased thoughts, of any opinion from further conversations that might contribute to your listening abilities to be completely free, clear, and open.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
All right.
Here we go.
Just, you can tell by my pace what my mindset is when I begin this, okay?
Okay.
All right, I'm going to be quick. I've only got 2 minutes, so here we go. I'm 52, and I've learned it's all about luck and timing in life. Jack and Carol Buck met in the late 60s, and about 9 months and 3 hours later, I was born. I grew up and I live in St. Louis, home of the Super Bowl champion St. Louis Rams. My dad was my best friend, and my mom taught me everything I know. Her father, Joe Linsnick, played for the Chicago Bears in the early 1930s and was named by George Halas on his all-time Bears team. My grandpa, Joe, played with Bronco Nagurski and Red Grange. He was like a second dad to me, so I grew up with an enormous love for the Bears and for the history of this great league. Back to timing. My dad's career took off when I was little, and I saw a man who loved to go to work. I saw what it meant to be a good broadcaster, but more than that, I saw what it meant to be a good man. He grew up during the Depression, was shot in Germany in World War II, and made his name, our name, the hard way. Timing. 1994, Fox gets the rights to cover the NFC. CBS is out. I'm pissed off because my dad's at CBS. And Fox hires Madden and Summerall, Stockton and Millen, and they run out of money, and then they allow me and Kenny Albert and Tom Brenneman to learn and grow in the job. I worked for incredible creative people like David Hill, who won this award in 2017, Ed Gorin and Larry Jones and George Krieger back in the day. And after 8 years of doing football at Fox, Pat and John Madden left, and it took three people to fill those two roles: myself, Chris Collinsworth, and Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman, who is sitting on this stage, is everything that's right about the game of football. He's everything that's right about the Hall of Fame. He has more integrity than anybody I have ever met, and he deserves an Emmy for his work on air that is long overdue. It's our 20th year together, and I share this award with my dear friend Troy Aikman. Thanks to producers Mike Burks, Richie Zients, directors Artie Kempner, and Rich Russo, booth mates Dave Schwabe, Bill Garrity,
and Ed Sfida. Lastly, and I know it's time to go, my editorial consultant, Steve Horn, who's been a best friend and makes me appear smart, smarter than I actually am. And I work for people that trust me and who I'd rather have a drink with than Eric Shanks and Brad Zager and Jake Ullman than anybody in my life. And finally, timing is best when it has to do with your personal life. I was married in 93 and I got two great daughters who are my best friends and smarter than Dad in Natalie and Trudy. And 9 years ago, I saw a woman standing in a hallway at Broncos Stadium after a Peyton Manning game. I stalked her. I married her. That was 7 years ago, and 3 years ago, we had Blake and Wyatt. I stand here as Jack and Carol's son, Joe and Lily's grandson, Julie Buck's brother, Natalie, Trudy, Blake, and Wyatt's daddy. Very proud. Very proud to get the Pete Rozelle Award. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more from Oliver and Me.
Thoughts, Oliver?
Okay. First of all, let me say something. Joe, you're a fucking gem, dude. You know how to speak, and you are rushing the shit out of that, but it was still impactful. Fucking awesome. I get it now a little bit, Michelle. I mean, only because he listed off 1,000 names at the
right.
end. I'm this person's dad. I'm this person's son. I'm
grandson.
This person's this. Or this person's grandson. But you're
I cop to.
But I'm not Michelle Beisner's. I'm not Michelle Beisner's husband.
To Michelle. Right.
Yeah, that's where I screwed it up. But the paragraph before that was written, it's written in a way that is smart, but it killed me because I was leading to her name being at ESPN, which I said all this last week, and being at Monday Night Football, the best part of Monday Night Football,
yeah.
Michelle Beisner, my wife. Well, I cut not realizing that I hadn't said her name at the top of that paragraph.
Yes.
And so that's what killed me. And then I'm the asshole.
It's an honest mistake. I mean, at the end of the day, who really gives a shit? I mean,
I know that, but you have, I'm glad that you kind of see my point now. I'm not some lunatic that is, you know, taking his moment away, to which at one point last week when he was sensitive and defensive about this because I was a little bummed out and hurt, he's like, you know what you've done? You've deflated and taken away
Wrong.
My moment. And
that's not what I said. I said my memory of going in for this award in Canton is completely tainted now I disappointed you.
No, not what he said, but that's okay. The point is, he listed at the very end, like all he had to do was just say, and proud husband to Michelle Beisner.
No,
and just anything.
I will say this, as much as I'm like, who gives a shit? And I still believe that. Who cares, really? You know what I mean?
Because I'm with you.
This is for an audience of however many. No one's really going to hear this. It's different when you're at the Oscars and you forget to do your wife, say your wife, and then millions of people know about it. No one fucking knows about it. The 3.5 people who listen to the show will know about it. But I get what you're saying, only because he listed off 1,000 names and who he was to these people specifically. That I get where you're like, what the fuck? What happened to me?
That was to be covered in the paragraph that got chopped as I'm hyperventilating. I understand how anybody can understand. I'm just trying to defend myself. Can I understand what he's saying?
So he's going on this, like, he's telling me that he's going on this apology tour. Like, my girlfriend, Kathy Lee, who is a co-host of a morning show in Denver on 103.5 The Fox, He goes on her show and he comes out the other day and he says, well, I just apologized to all of Denver for you. So I talked to Kathy and she said, man, was it really like that bad? Because Joe told me that he told your whole love story and that he said all this great stuff about you. He just failed to mention your name. And I was like, let me send it to you and call me back. So I sent it to her and she did exactly what you did. She was dying laughing and she's like, yeah, I get it.
Well, what about your dad? What about your dad, Michelle? Did he listen?
What about him?
Did he listen to it?
No. And he will not.
It's hard to get an audio video file on a flip phone, first of all.
No, he doesn't even have a flip phone, on a rotary phone.
On a rotary phone. The reception's not very good. And secondly, she doesn't want to prove his point for him. So,
right.
According to him, if you interviewed him now with, you know, him not knowing that you know the story, I would imagine you told your dad, oh my God, the whole speech was about me. It was amazing. And it was 80% Michelle, 10%
kid. I have not said one word to my father about it. In fact, my mother said, well, will you send me a link to the speech? I said, oh, we didn't get one. Sorry, Mom.
Okay, well hold on. I'm going to dig deeper just for a second because it is called Daddy Issues, right? So why wouldn't you want to send this to your dad? How do you think he would react to Buck not mentioning your name? For real, like what's the issue?
He would throw himself a parade and get like a big kegger and drink it and praise the fact that he's right, that he knew all along that Joe would not say my name and that I should now praise him for his bullshit prediction.
Okay, well, hold on, because prior to the speech, your dad said to you, he's not going to mention you. This is not about you.
He said you might get a mention, but, you know, probably not. I should have listened to him. So
he started digging the grave before I even walked up there. Well, and then I walk up on the stage, and then I just proceeded to lay down in the grave. So now I'm trying to climb out of the dirt. I just did the SI podcast with Jimmy Traina. Said I added to the apology tour. I said it on that. I went it everywhere I go. That's all I can do. I can't rewind time. All I can do is be the best Joe I can be going forward.
And you are the best Joe, and I love you. But when you do this apology tour, you have to tell the whole story because
I did. All I said was I forgot to say her name. I said
but
the only person.
That's really the whole story. When you
well, that's the gist of it.
No, but no. But listen. The whole story is as long as Joe on this apology tour doesn't talk about how you reacted to it, then it makes you
never
look,
have
right. Then it makes you look like some sort of a narcissist who's like, why didn't you mention my name? But if he just says, look, I forgot my wife's name and I'm sorry, then great. You know, that's fine. Yeah. You don't need the whole context of the story.
And the only reason that the impression thing is, the reason why I'm jumping on with you guys is because last week I was left with the impression that you, Oliver, thought that I was like some narcissistic asshole who just needed him to stand up there and thank me for his 30-year career. And that is not the case.
Well, you know, if that's what you think, then yeah, I have my own opinion.
That's...
No. Look, I know you extremely well. I would never call you a narcissist in any fashion. But my point is that it hurts you. It actually affected you. You were bummed out by it. But you know,
I was bummed out by it.
But that has nothing to do with Joe. That has to do with you and the perception of both of you and how he feels about you. Not about how he actually feels about you. The perception from the public who is listening to that speech, their perception on your relationship.
Oh, hell yeah.
True. It's true because you know how Joe feels about you. He said all these amazing things.
But it's okay. I think if you put the shoe on the other foot, if Aaron were standing up in this kind of position and she said the same thing, and I'm stand up, here's the proud, I don't know her siblings' names, but if your mom did it, oh, I stand up here a proud mother to Kate, to Wyatt.
Boston.
Boston. A proud, no,
Boston's not. That's not her kid.
Oh, yeah, okay. A proud wife to Kurt.
Yeah.
A proud dog.
Okay, we got it.
Good night, everybody. Thank you. That's my only point.
Here's
the
thing.
You would feel a little stung by it, and it's okay. That's called being human. When you are the person that is there day in, day out, loves him, stands by him, does everything, you would be just a tiny bit hurt, and that's okay.
I wouldn't be, first of all. I wouldn't be. I wouldn't be number one because I am Oliver Hudson, and people know who I am. So when she says—
You don't have to be number one. You just have to be mentioned.
Nah. I wouldn't. I because I know the way my mom feels about me. If
you're
she gushed,
telling me that you would not be bothered.
Let him talk.
If she gushed about me for 2.5 minutes and then forgot my name. It's like, oh well, I don't give a shit about that stuff. I don't care about that kind of stuff. I mean, that's just me. I just don't. That does not bother me. I'm not affected by that in any way. You know, I'm just not. So I'm different that way.
Can we acknowledge? But you did acknowledge.
But why
you understand why I would have been a little bummed out?
I acknowledge how you would be like, oh shit, yeah, you mentioned everybody, and then you didn't mention me. But again, I don't know the ins and the outs of how it went down. Meaning, like, was there an actual fight? Was it like a moment where you were like really upset and it caused some friction within your relationship?
Yeah.
No. Well, no. I mean, we had a great night. I obviously knew what.
Yeah.
And felt
so it was more fun.
Right away,
was it more
but
fun?
But we had a great night.
Was it more fun? Like, oh my god, you forgot my name and funny and this and that and like, sorry, holy shit, and I love you and this is it? Or was it like, fuck you, Joe? Like, you son of a bitch.
It was not like that. It was the first for sure. It was like, oh, let's listen to the speech again because they sent the link, and then I'm like, oh, I think he forgot to say my name. I don't know. And then we had dinner and drinks, and it was, and the night was great.
I'm sorry again. So sorry. Now we can continue our podcast because our listeners just all tuned out.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, it's okay. I just had to come on and defend
look,
myself.
I get it. As long as it didn't cause any sort of real fight or whatever, then yeah, it's fine. It's fun. You know, right. It's all good.
It's fun.
It's fun.
Fun. It's fun.
It's so
fun, Garrett. It's fun.
All right, I love you guys. Is the show going well?
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's fun.
Have you shot any scenes, or is tomorrow your first scene?
I shot a couple days. I shot a few days.
And did you remember your lines?
I did. I knew my lines. I think I'll know my lines this week. And I'm really making it a point to try to really know my lines really, really well on this thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There you go.
Love you.
Love you, babe. You look good.
Love you, babe.
You're looking good. You look healthy. Guys. Loving it.
Love you, Michelle. Michelle Beisner-Buck, ladies and gentlemen. Michelle Beisner-Buck.
Wow.
I'm the proud son to Jack and Carol. I'm the proud grandson to Joe and Lily Linsnack. I'm the proud husband to Michelle Beisner and the proud dad to Natalie, Trudy, Blake, and Wyatt. Good night, everybody.
That was good. That was fun.
Yeah. So there you have it. All this is going on. I've got Field of Dreams. I've got Jeopardy that aired last week. I've got, you know, my podcast partner shooting a show in Albuquerque, New Mexico. There's a lot of stuff happening.
First of all, let's start with Jeopardy. I mean, do you know the ratings
I asked yesterday and I'm because it's syndicated, I think it takes a couple of weeks because it's pulling from all these different markets. And I don't think people really, my family, my kids don't understand what syndicated is, but it could be on the NBC affiliate in St. Louis and the ABC affiliate in Albuquerque and right on down the line. Each little affiliate buys the show. That's why the show's so profitable.
Yeah.
It costs $5 to make.
Oh, yeah.
And they just print money. That's why they couldn't screw this up. So as my episodes are about to air, they announced that Mike Richards, who's the executive producer, or the actual line producer too, is going to take over as host, which was my call back in 2020 when I met with him in November or December. I just saw that coming. I was like, it's going to be Mike, and if it's not Mike, it's going to be Ken, which I think is, and I just said this on another podcast today, I think that's what allowed me to be totally freewheeling.
Yeah.
I wasn't there trying to get a job.
Yeah.
And that's a good position to be in. I had a blast. And because I shot it when we were all together and we ended up going to Mexico that day back in May, it had been so long that I was watching these shows just like an average person. It happened to be me, but I didn't remember any of the specifics. So I loved it. I loved how it looked. I loved how I came off. I loved the fact that they allowed a lot of my jokes to stay in, which they could have easily cut out. And, you know, who can say they've done a Rodney Dangerfield impersonation as the host of Jeopardy? And I can. So it turned out, I mean, those in my life whose opinion I trust loved it. And I'm getting people from a lot of different areas in the business and beyond that really thought I did a good job. So it's been great.
You still have to send me a link, at least for one show, because I mean it's on at a time that I at 4:30. I mean, who watches TV then? I don't know, but
he is.
Yeah, send me a link. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more daddy issues. And then moving to the Field of Dreams. How was your criticism with the Field of Dreams broadcast?
I have never done a game that across the board people were more, and nothing to do with me, the setting, the Costner part, the two teams, the game they played. I don't feel like we got in the way as broadcasters. The production was off the charts. I mean, it just was. The rating was the highest regular season rated game since 2005. I mean, people tuned in, liked what they saw, stayed with it, and it was just a special night that I will never forget. Now, we're going to do it again next year, and they're going to keep trying to do it, and I'll be interested to see how it plays year two. But for the lights to come up on this place, it's sitting in the middle of a cornfield adjacent, across a cornfield from where they shot the movie in Dyersville, Iowa. I think people were stunned at how it looked, and Costner and the music and everything else. It was pretty magical. And that's not being, you know, gaggy kind of,
and you know,
over the top. It was good. It was
and
fun.
You wore a bow tie, right?
I wore a bow tie. That's as far as I would go. John Smoltz dressed as like a character from the musical Newsies. He had the
he was like in My Fair Lady or something.
Yeah, My Fair Lady. Like he's walking through Mary Poppins, like Mary he's doing Poppins. Chalk art in the park, waiting for Mary to land again after she's been gone for months. So, and Tom Verducci wore a top hat, and it was just like I will wear a bow tie. How about that? They had hats. I'm like, I'm not wearing a hat.
Oh man, that's fucking funny. I wish you did go all out.
You get hello again, everybody. And I didn't do what we talked about, where it's like, and here's a ground ball to the old sidewinder who whips it over to first. That'll be out number two.
You should have done that at least just one play. I mean, what do you have to lose? Absolutely.
Here we are, John, sitting in the catbird seat. Look down below where they're whipping the old horse side around. Yeah, no.
Would have been amazing, dude. It would have been gone viral. It would have blown us up, daddy.
I'm tired of being viral. I'm tired of anything that starts with VIR.
Viagra. Virus.
Huh? Viagra is VIA.
Viral. Yeah. What else starts with VIR? Virtual.
We just landed on the same. Yeah, I don't want to do anything virtual. I want viral. To be there. I don't. Huh?
Viral.
Viral. I'm all for viral.
Okay. Virgil. You
Virginal.
Virgil was I think that was Sam Elliott's name in Tombstone. That was Wyatt Earp's brother. I think his name was Virgil.
Have you seen the Val Kilmer documentary?
No, I want to see it though. Is it great? Did you watch it?
I thought it was great. It was mesmerizing. And Kurt's in it as a young man, obviously, as they're shooting Tombstone.
Ooh, you know what? I'm alone in my hotel room tonight and I'm gonna watch that.
Right after you watch 5 episodes of Jeopardy.
Exactly. Well, we have time. I mean, once we get off this podcast in however long, like I'm hanging, so.
I say 3 minutes. I say start the clock now, and in 3 minutes, we're off.
No, we're at 35 minutes, according to my Zoom. I think we need to give them a little bit more. But, so in the Field of Dreams game, did anyone like choke on a hot dog?
No.
What
was the girl's name again?
Gabby.
Gabby Hoffman?
Gabby Hoffman. Good.
Gabby Hoffman.
Nice, Buck. Wow, that's good.
Gabby Hoffman. Burke Lancaster walked through the corn, came out, did a wave.
And Ray Liotta, was Ray Liotta there?
Ray Liotta was not there.
He did. Actually, I heard he showed up, but it was for the wrong event. He was actually the Goodfellas character.
Right. He's like, Karen!
Karen! With Tommy that, used to slice the garlic so thin it melted in the pan.
That's good. It's good. So I told you this, I think offline, so to speak, that I talked to Costner about. Costner wanted me to be the point person between him and MLB, him and Fox. And so I showed up to the rehearsal and made sure that anybody that was around him, especially from my network, the people that I know that make all these video montages look so amazing, that he knew he could trust them. I, it would be like, you know, he's a creative movie making person, and now you're trusting the offshoot of this film to people at a sports network that you don't know. And I said, trust me when I say this guy's name is PT Navarro, who does all these specialty shoots and all these really cool things. I said, when you see this, you're going to be blown away by how this looks with you walking now as a 65-year-old man through the corn out onto the field. You're going to be thrilled. Mm-hmm. And it just was a win that way. And I got to play catch with Kevin Costner on the field the night before the game.
Which maybe the real Field of Dreams happened. Maybe Kevin Costner is actually your father. Ever thought about that?
God.
Maybe this is from a whole other time. Maybe he came out of the cornfield and Jack Buck is not your dad, but it's actually Kevin Costner.
And that's why having a catch with him was so emotional for me.
Yeah, you were weeping, you know?
I was. I was thinking back to myself at 20, which is when the movie came out. Thinking back to where I was in life, that was, I had done 1 year of minor league baseball. And if you had gone back then and told me that in 2021 you're going to be doing a game between the White Sox and the Yankees on a field right next to the one where they just shot this movie, and you're going to play catch with the guy that was in this and Dances with Wolves and all the other things, I would have believed you. No, I wouldn't have believed you.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it was such a big success for the MLB. I wonder. Now, of course, Field of Dreams is big, you know, but what if they did, because next year the ratings will not be as big. It's just, it just won't be. I mean, the event itself was exciting and drew a lot of people, but what if you did something?
Well, it was unique.
What if you did something gimmicky
each year? Next year it's no longer going to be unique.
What if you played next year at the Durham Bulls Stadium from... You know,
yeah. Somebody has said that to me on a radio show I did. You know, take Major League Baseball to a small town. It doesn't always have to be Dyersville, Iowa. It can be in the Badlands. You could do a game. It could be in Maine somewhere. Where a lot of these communities, by the way, have minor league baseball. So it's not like you're landing on Mars and playing baseball and everybody's like, oh my God, what is this game? They all know the game.
Of course.
It's just that they haven't seen a major league game in their community. So, yeah, I think there's value. There's
value. Of course. Well, hockey did it, you know, New Year's Day, that outdoor game, you know.
And it's a blast. They did one in St. Louis a few years ago, and it was a tough ticket. I went down there. They played the Blues and Blackhawks, played a game at Busch Stadium. I think it was the Blackhawks. It was definitely the Blues, and it was so cool. They did one at in Tahoe this past year where it was still so warm. They had to play at midnight. But I think taking these, but that requires a lot of planning and money and all that other stuff. But it's worth it, I think.
Fun. You just have a good time, man. You just have a good time. You have a great job. Such a great
job. Most of the time, yeah. It's a great job.
It's awesome.
Awesome. James Holzhauer ripped me for my Jeopardy. I guess he's like number two on the all-time list, money-wise.
Oh, really? What did he say?
He had two tweets, so I don't really get it. He had one where he ranked the guest hosts, and he had Aaron Rodgers 1, me 2, and then Ken Jennings last. So maybe that was more a rip on Ken Jennings. I don't. That's their little inside joke. And I hear Ken Jennings, by the way, who are one of our wardrobe people at Fox, who I love and think of as a sister, is doing this show with him. And she says he's great. And he thought it went well, me doing Jeopardy. But this guy, James Holzhauer, then said another tweet was like, well, I hear they're going to make whoever gets the job quit their other job. So I'm hoping Joe Buck gets the job, which was a rip on me doing sports.
You know what? Who is this guy? He's number two on the money list.
Number two on the money list. One of the three genii that competed in the All-Star event. It was him, Ken Jennings, him, and then the bartender from New York.
Who gives a shit? Who's this guy?
Whatever. I got more people ripping me than that have more power than him. So, you know, hey, that's life. So eventually I'll be gone. You know, that's the thing. And yeah. I saw this with my dad.
Yeah.
Eventually life moves on.
Yeah.
You know, you think as a kid, I grew up thinking my dad hung the moon. And in some cases, even to this day, people in St. Louis think that he hung the moon. But okay, so then you're gone and then shit just keeps going. So nobody really cares. I don't know why. And I go to therapy for this stuff, and yet I really shouldn't care. I shouldn't care with the social media stuff, because eventually I'm not going to be doing it, and I'm going to look back and remember the games and remember the job I had. I'm not going to remember that other stuff. I don't care. And then that pack moves on to the next person doing it. It doesn't matter.
Did your dad get criticized?
All the time. But back in the day, I mean, he was signed to a four-year deal, a two-year deal, and then an option for another 2 years. And after 2 years of doing the games on CBS, now this, he was in his mid-60s, but they went another direction. And he was doing the games with Tim McCarver. And I saw the harsh side of what I do now. And I saw letters that he would get, crazy, lunatic letters, like racist stuff and stuff from other countries, and like hate mail. It was hate mail. Now hate mail takes the form of social media, where it doesn't take any effort or really any ingenuity to get right at somebody. You just say, hey, at Jack Buck, hey, at Oliver Hudson, hey, at Buck, hey, whatever. And you know, if they're reading their stuff, it goes right to their phone, which somebody said to me, and I know we're going on and on about this, but it becomes almost more personal because it's on your phone. Like, this is the thing I talk to my family. I'm not opening a letter from a nut job who says you suck. It's coming from a prison.
Yeah.
It's on my phone. So this is what I have pictures of my kids, and then I'm like, okay, swipe past a picture of my kid on my screensaver, and then it's like, oh, you fucking suck. Oh, great. That's nice. So anyway, what are we going to have for lunch?
I know. I mean, I don't read that stuff, you know? I barely read it. I mean, it's different but with me.
You're in a position, like I say this to, people are stuck with me. Like, if they're watching the World Series, they got me. If they're following you, there's a reason they follow you. Unless they're just a complete asshole, they like you. They see you in something. They watched you. They have an affection for you on screen. Or a band, you know, Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters. Mm-hmm. If you bother to follow him, you like him. So for me, I have to be down the middle and do all these games, and it's just like you become the lightning rod for people who are pissed off that their team just lost the game that defines their existence. So it's just a different experience for somebody in sports than it is for somebody in acting. If you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues, don't keep it to yourself. Please share the love and tell a friend about Daddy Issues, and go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We beg
you. That's right. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up right after the break. You talk about sort of, it's a short life, you know what I mean, at the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things, and who really gives a shit? And I just got a unsolicited text from my dad a few days ago, and he said, paraphrasing, but it was reflective. You know, it was like, hey, you know, thinking about you, I love you. Just know that I love you more than you ever know, and I think about you every day. And, you know, I know I wasn't a good dad to you and Kate and Kurt, you know, basically I'm proud that I'm happy Kurt came in your life and all this stuff. And then he says, sort of ending it with, you know, he goes like, my life is like an acid trip. You know, that's something he said. And it just sounded so reflective because I, in that moment, imagined him thinking back on his life. He's 70 and just sort of going over it from the beginning. And his dad bailing on him, and then him having, you know, a kid at 16 and giving it up for adoption, and then we come along and he bails, and then his second, you know, family, and then he had that messes up, and then he's got a third kid. He's probably lonely and sitting there thinking about his life, and he's probably like, holy fuck, what a fucking trip. You know what I mean?
It's just got to be scary when you sit wherever you are, and there's more behind you than there is in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what age you are when that happens. It's not 50. It's before 50.
Because
mm-hmm. I sure as hell don't expect to live to 100. So, mm-hmm. And then all those young life decisions that form the rest of your life. So it's one thing, you know, he was making decisions back then that shaped not just his life for the rest of time, but the life of Oliver, the life of Kate, the mm-hmm. life of Goldie, the life of his other kids, the life of, and all this, everything just kind of, it's like a bunch of tributaries that come off that. And those decisions that he made carried major consequences.
Oh, yeah.
Them.
Oh, yeah.
Now here you are, as a 40 whatever, 5-year-old man. And you're looking back at, and you're affected by what he did in a moment when, you know, he was going through whatever the hell he was going through. So it just, everything feeds off everything. And now here he is going, God, I look
back. Well, especially,
and
you know this, just being such a present dad and it being such an important part of my life. I mean, almost too much, not too much, but, you know, I put a lot into it. I can't imagine being, whatever happens with Aaron and I, being 70 years old and thinking back on my first two kids and being like, oh my God, like I don't know them. I never have. I have no idea who the fuck they are. I knew them as 12 and 13, 12-year-old kids.
Yeah, you froze in time. You stuck
dude,
in time
that's
for him.
So gnarly. I know that a lot of people have had, you know, abandonment issues or parents who have left. And you sort of just talk about it and you go through your therapy. But when you really sort of dig in to what that must feel like, not for you, sort of the victim, so to speak, but for, you know, the other side of it, that's got to be so difficult, you know, especially if you have remorse and if you are reflective and if you are sort of not towards the end, but like you said, on the second nine, and you're going through every piece of your world and thinking, man, I missed out. I have two children and I don't know who the fuck they are. And they're 45 years old. I mean, that's so weird. I mean, imagine not knowing Natalie or Trudy. I mean, imagine me not knowing Wilder or Rio. It's so fucking crazy, dude. So crazy. It is,
and I just can't imagine. And I know we've had people that we've talked to on this podcast that listen that have had abandonment issues and have dealt with this. And I just can't imagine being a parent and being like,
yeah,
you know, whatever. And just skipping out and not regretting that every minute of every day, to the point where you would be probably driven back in there to go, all right, let's make this work. Or, okay, it's not going to work between mom and dad, but damn it, I'm going to be a part of this kid's life and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that this kid knows that I love him or her. And
well, it's funny because as you get older, or I can only speak for myself, as I get older and I've been through all my shit with my dad and personally and dealing with whatever it was, you know, the roles have reversed. We've talked about this before, but I feel like the older one now, the more mature one, the one who has to take the initiative and make sure that when he is on his deathbed, that he has no regrets. If he doesn't have the capacity to do it emotionally, and I do, I feel like it's my job to almost reach out to him and give him what he can't take himself. because he just doesn't have the tools. You know, so if I can give that to him before he dies and he's allowed to sort of move on to whatever the next chapter is without guilt, then I think that's my job to do that. You know what I mean?
I don't know if it's your job.
Not my job, but it's
It's very big of you, and that just speaks to where you are in life. You've got a great wife. You've got great kids. You're a grounded person. You somehow found your way through your childhood and the craziness that, as a St. Louisan and as a Midwesterner, I see the LA life, wondering how in the world you ended up the kind of person that you are. And I think it speaks to your mom. I think it speaks mm-hmm. to Kurt and your sister and everybody that you have around you that you lean on to become the man that you've become. And now you're in a position where you can reach out an olive branch to your dad, and it's completely flipped. Mm-hmm. And you have the upper hand on that now, because it's almost like, what can he say? What can he do? You can't Nothing. Go back and no. go, hey, you know about the, you know about these past 30 years. Sorry about that. I mean, what do you say? There's yeah. nothing to say.
No.
And you're a dad yourself, so you understand it now more than everybody or anyone. You understand it. And yeah. that's what I tried to get across in my book, which my half-brothers and sisters didn't really get. What I was saying was, oh, there were a couple snarky things I put in there, but now as a man who's gone through divorce and who has seen what it does to kids, I understand why when I came into the world in 1969, a house full of six children and a wife, an ex-wife, they didn't like me.
Yeah.
And because I represented to them the end of their
yeah.
nuclear family.
Yeah.
And that's just human nature. So, and now I understand that better than ever, because I've gone that down that path of trying to make sure everything's okay with Natalie and Trudy before I try to make sure I'm okay myself.
Yeah.
And now blending Natalie and Trudy with Michelle, now blending Natalie and Trudy with Michelle, Blake, and Wyatt, now making sure they know that they've not lost 1 ounce of their standing with me, and they're as important now as they were when they were two. That's been my life goal, mm-hmm. not calling the Field of Dreams game. It's I want to make sure the people that I love know how much I love them. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all that matters.
And you've done good. It was rocky in the beginning, but you know, things smoothed out. More than smoothed yeah. out, you know.
Yes. And I have letters that I've written to them, letters that they've written to me, stuff that I don't keep a lot of that stuff, but that And I had a whole wall of things that my girls wrote to me over the years that was up in my old room that'll go up in some part of this new house of Father's Day cards and just these different just because notes that they would write me, or a pump up before an All-Star game when my voice was wrecked, that mean more to me than any Emmy that's sitting behind me or any whatever.
Were they actual written letters?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I mean, it's funny. They were right in that sweet spot of still writing letters. I mean, I don't think past the Father's Day card when they're 12 and 13 and under that I will get anything handwritten just because of the world that we live in today.
Right. It's going to be ROTFL, and every correspondence you're going to get from your kids are going to have those little, like,
sure, it's like TBH, Dad, LOL, FML, OMG.
Oh, my God, Dad, where were you? I had such FOMO that I was not there when you were in ALB. Speaking of which, what is on your shirt? I can't, for the life of me, I can't tell if that's Cher. Oh, no, okay. It looked like a skinny human.
No, look, it says bacon, and it's like a stone piece of bacon. Bacon.
Oh my God. Did you buy that for yourself, or did somebody buy that for you?
I did. I got it for myself.
See, look at it now, right now. Like, as your back there, it looked like a skinny person holding a microphone.
Yeah,
it looked
it does.
From the Sonny and Cher show.
No, it's a strip of bacon smoking a big doobie.
Oh, I feel so much better. And I'm really glad I brought this up.
See?
Look at his heavy eyes, bloodshot eyes.
Yeah, bacon, man. Aspen, Colorado. Eyes. That's what it says underneath.
Eyes black like doll's eyes.
All right. That was fun.
I think we gave the people more than we expected to give. I think we gave the people everything that they
yeah.
That
they I mean, we'll finish. Let's finish with this. Look, we always joke about how many people listen and how we make no money and all that. I do love having these conversations. You know, I mean, this maybe, you know, we talked about this before. Maybe this just becomes a passion project, and we just love having conversations and having people come up to us and saying, hey, man, I love that episode. And then, you know, maybe success will come, but who gives a fuck?
A wise man once said, if you build it, he will come.
Ooh. Yeah.
We've built this podcast.
Well, I think it's they will come, isn't it?
No, I used to think it was they will come. It's he.
No.
It's he.
No, it's they, because he needed money. If you build it, they will come, Ray.
No. He will come. It's about his dad. The whole movie, which I never really totally understood, is about his dad was a fan of Shoeless Joe Jackson, who was part of the 1919 Black Sox scandal, throwing the World Series. Young Ray Kinsella had a falling out with his dad because his dad was a fan of a criminal in his mind. Mm-hmm. And so they fell apart. They did not have a great relationship. Then the dad dies. And so there was a lot left unsaid. Mm. Everything we just talked about with you and your dad, there was all these things left unsaid between father and son. Hmm. And this is all a moment for him building this thing. So his dad walks out of the corn as a young man and they have that catch and ugh. He calls him dad. And it's just, and the dad knows that's, he doesn't really ever say,
yeah,
you're my dad.
Oh my God.
But
dude.
He just knows. And what then he movie. Walks out and he's like, dad.
What a fucking movie.
Yeah.
Ugh.
The whole ease his pain yeah. was not about
ease
the player,
pain.
The Moonlight Graham guy that got in for the New York Giants and never gotten at bat. That was Burt Lancaster's yeah. character who left the game, became a small town doctor, and had a fulfilled life with a wife and kids and
yeah.
the one that saves the girl, Gabby, from choking on the hot dog. It wasn't about his pain. It was about easing the pain of the dad who died for the son and vice versa.
Wow, I'm gonna watch it again.
Yeah, no, I've been
after Jeopardy, after Val Kilmer, then it's Field of Dreams.
Right.
Wait, yes, wait. But I still think at some point in the movie it was if you build it, they will come. No,
that's what I always thought.
Are you 100% on this?
Yes.
I'm gonna look this shit up the minute I'm off of this because I thought it was also about trying to save the farm. As well, right?
Well, at one point, James Earl Jones says, oh, they will come, Ray.
Yeah, they will
they
come.
They most
Ray.
Definitely will come.
They'll come from all over, Ray.
Right.
I am your father,
yeah,
Luke.
The game has been like a blackboard. Erased, and then drawn on and erased again. They will come, Ray.
They will
most
come, Ray.
Definitely will come. This is CNN.
That's a good way to end. I like this. I like father. Ending this show this way because it's Field of Dreams. It ties in. Everything's good. Tying into daddy issues. If we build it, I mean, he will come. I mean, we got to go to they because who? My dad, your dad? I don't know. Like, we need an audience.
No, well, my dad can walk out of the corn, so to speak. Your dad just walks out of Malibu wearing Doc Martens and a fucking tie-dye shirt. Like, hey, it's been a crazy acid trip. Right. What's up, kid?
He walks out of like a Ventura casino. Like, hey, man.
It's my family texting me. And so, yeah, just look it up. Maybe they do at one point say they will come, but I'm here to tell you because I watched it. Okay, here, Margot Carmichael.
Field What'd she
of
say?
Dreams, 1989 film about an Iowa corn farmer who hears a voice telling him, if you build it, he will come.
Yeah.
He interprets this as an instruction to build a baseball diamond in his fields. After he does, Shoeless Joe Jackson and other dead baseball players emerge from the cornfields to play ball. But that, again, that's not the main...
No.
Objective
yeah.
of what's going on there. It's father and son, things left unsaid.
Okay.
Pain.
I'm going to believe it. He will come.
He will come. That's what it is. Trust me.
All right, JB. I'm gonna go. I got a lot of videos to watch. A lot of TV to watch.
What's your first line tomorrow?
My first line is Renee, wait up.
Renee, wait up.
Renee, wait up. And I hand her a file. And she says, this is Armand, blah, 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 the whole thing. And I say, yeah, it's Tony. And her kid.
Tony's a female?
Yeah. I think she's from Cambodia in the show. Yeah, it's Tony and her kid. They look pretty cozy, don't they? And then she says, yeah, da, 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 da. Maybe they're sleeping together. And I say, yeah, well, whatever it is, she lied to us, which means she's protecting him. And then she says, why you have a smile on your face? I don't know her line, blah, blah, blah. And then I say, what do I say? This is my bigger line. I say, after losing Theo, I thought that there was zero chance of us getting anyone else on the inside, but Tony's already in. There it is. And then, it's a little bit like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Tony?
And she says, you think you can? She's like, yeah, if you can turn her. And I'm like, piece of cake.
Piece of cake, babe. Piece of cake.
All right.
All right. We built it.
He will come.
He came.
He came.
Just leave it at that.
Leave it there. I don't want to. I have so many things to say.
Don't ruin a good thing.
Yeah. All right. Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margot Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.